Hi folks, welcome to episode 91 of the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters. I am joined by Beau, and today we are being interrupted by some heavy drilling. So if you can hear that, I apologize, but the schedule's really full. There's literally nothing we can do about it. But today we're going to be talking about Nero.
Yeah.
So the question about Nero is he as bad as history remembers him being?
Pretty much, yeah. I think so. If you believe the accounts...
Well, that's the question.
Yeah. They do agree.
Right, okay.
It's really bad. So just to say straight off the bat here, this really isn't child-friendly, this one.
Well, neither was the Tiberius or Caligula.
Yeah, quite a few epochs aren't really child-friendly. No. But this particularly is like really specific... There's plenty of rapes in this. Right. Loads of murder and torture.
Right.
So...
Because there are definitely people online who run a line of Nero apologism. I haven't particularly delved into it, but I've seen videos. You know, was Nero as bad as we've said?
It's pure contrarianism. It's just they're trying to sell a book or something. I don't understand why people do that.
I mean, I've never looked into Nero in any depth. I've watched a few documentaries on him, and if all the historical accounts are like, yeah, he was a pretty bad dude. Okay, what else have you got to go on?
It's really annoying that like Tacitus or someone like Tacitus will just have pages and pages and pages about his crimes and follies.
Yeah.
And someone goes, no, if someone in the 21st century goes, no, I know better.
Mm.
I know better than Tacitus. No, you don't.
We've discussed at length how much I hate modern historical revisionism.
Yeah. Yeah, they just fly in the face of it. It's to be...
The Persians only had 100,000 men. Look, they knew, they would have said. Anyway.
Yeah, so again, the main sources are Suetonius and Tacitus. I'll be quoting a lot from Suetonius here because I've been rereading both, or have reread entirely both for this, and have read them both many times in the past. Whatever you get in Suetonius, you just get much, much more in Tacitus.
Right.
So where it could be a few pages talking about something in Tacitus, you just get a paragraph in Suetonius. So where, you know, we've only got a finite amount of time here.
Yeah.
I'll be quite often quoting the Suetonius passage and then saying, but this is what Tacitus said about it in more detail. So hope that's all right.
Yeah.
All right. So should we just kick off?
Yeah, let's just get into it.
So the first thing to say is about, well, he became emperor very young. He was like 16.
Mm-hmm.
The story of how he ascends to be imperator and taking the whole bundle of powers that Claudius, his adoptive father, had had and Caligula before him, is all bound up with his mother,
right.
Agrippina the Younger.
Right.
So she's just an absolute key part in everything. If it wasn't for her machinations, he probably may well not have been ever been emperor.
Right.
And she is, I think I said in the last one, like a very, very shrewd political operator.
Was this
very,
Tiberius' very ruthless. Daughter or whose daughter is she?
Well, she's the daughter of Germanicus.
Right.
She's the sister of Caligula.
Yeah.
So just very quickly to say then, Caligula had three sisters. The eldest one he absolutely loved and adored. Oh, he had incest with all of them. The eldest one he absolutely loved and adored, and she died, and he was completely heartbroken when she died. The other two sisters he had problems with and banished them.
Right.
I mean, they were probably, if he hadn't have died when he did, he probably would have had them bumped off at some point.
Starved to death like the others.
Probably, yeah. Right. I mean, yeah. But so she just about survives. So... Tom Holland says it's sort of, everyone, all modern scholars, everyone that's ever knows the story, it's like, it's an amazing comeback for her to go from really sort of right on the point of probably death to being, well, a female and emperor in all but name, at least for a while, a de facto ruler, because she ends up holding sort of all the strings of power she controls. The Praetorians are under her thumb. All Nero's tutors and Nero himself are under her thumb. She is a de facto ruler for a while. So here's a passage from Suetonius just about Nero's early life. Suetonius says, at the age of three, Nero lost his father and inherited one third of the estate. But Gaius, Caligula, who was also named in the will, not only took everything but banished Agrippina. Nero therefore grew up in very poor circumstances, under the care of his aunt Domitia Lepida. Not that poor, not that poor, by the way.
Yeah.
Not actual penury or anything.
When we say poor, it's relative.
Yeah. For a member of the imperial family, poor. under his aunt Domitia Lepida, who chose a dancer and a barber to be his tutors. However, when Claudius succeeded Gaius, Nero had his inheritance restored to him in full, and a legacy from his stepfather, which left him well off. His mother's recall from banishment allowed him to enjoy once more the benefits of her powerful influence, so much so that the story got about that Claudius's wife Messalina, realising that Nero would become a rival to her son Britannicus, had sent assassins to strangle him during his afternoon nap. They were driven away in terror, people said, by a snake which suddenly darted from beneath Nero's pillow, but this was mere surmise based on the discovery of a sloughed off snake skin close by.
Right.
So there's this old story that goes with Nero that maybe, obviously nonsense, maybe his mum slept with a snake because it's that Alexander parallels there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And like snakes would defend him in the cradle and stuff. So
I think it's important to remember that pre-Christianity, snakes weren't considered some sort of demonic creature. Snakes actually had quite a high reputation in ancient traditional religions for some reason. Actually, don't know why. But Christianity really stigmatized the poor old snake.
Yeah, in the pre-Christian world, they do have sort of, different symbolism connected to them.
Well, snakes are often very positive, like on the Caduceus and things like that. They're associated with healing. So.
Right.
I don't know why. But in the Christian theology, obviously, they're associated with deception and forked tongues.
Yeah. But you can also see, can't you, how they are sort of demon-like in some way.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I hate snakes. Yeah,
I don't like snakes either. I don't hate them, and I think they're interesting animals, but like...
I suppose hate is too strong.
Yeah, then...
But I don't want to handle them. I don't want one as a pet.
I don't mind handling them, but even then I'm still... Well, this has fangs and it can bite me. Mm. You know, and it's a reptile, so there's something weird and alien about reptiles anyway. So, you know, it's not like a mammal where you can see the emotions from its behaviours, right? It just sits there, cold, and looks. So, yeah.
No, I'm with Indiana Jones on this. I hate snakes, more or less. actually, hate is too strong. I did handle one once at a zoo when you're allowed to. And I was just uncomfortable with it.
Yeah.
I was just uncomfortable with it. Anyway, that's snakes. So he ascends to power very young. He's a child, really. So again, where we mentioned before in the Republican days, you had to be 35 even to be a senator. And you really had to be a grey-haired old man. Well, that's where the root of the word senator comes from, being an old man, before you ascend to the highest offices of state.
Mm.
But now, well, Augustus broke all that, didn't it? Yeah. Well, even others, Pompey.
And loads of them.
Fabius was very, very young.
Yeah.
But 16 to be the full-blown...
And Scipio Africanus as well.
Yeah.
Even then, very, very young.
Sorry, that's what I was thinking of, actually. Sorry.
Yeah, I was thinking Fabius was old.
No, yeah, sorry, right. Yeah,
but,
sorry.
Yeah, Scipio that Africanus.
I was thinking of Scipio Africanus.
Yeah. But this isn't a time of crisis, that's the thing. The tradition has just ended.
Yeah.
But you can see how Nero then would be a paranoid young man and grow up in a world where, in his reality, there are people trying to kill him all the time and have been since probably some of his earliest memories. So, not good.
Ancient biographers love to do this thing where there's a progression in someone's character. They go from virtue to vice.
Yes.
With Caligula, it was very quick. But we have that with Nero, where he starts off not too bad when he's still under the thumb, doing as he's told. Mm. He's not too bad, and he sort of slowly gets worse until towards the end of his reign, it's mad. It's sort of Caligula-level madness.
Right.
Mass killings and all sorts of things.
God.
Just completely off the hook, no restraint on him whatsoever. Mm. On anything he can dream up, that sort of stuff, it gets to that.
Right.
So a quick line from Suetonius just about him coming to power. Quote, after being acclaimed imperator on the palace steps, he was taken in a litter to the Praetorian camp where he briefly addressed the troops. He then visited the Senate house where he remained until nightfall, refusing only one of the many high honours voted him, namely the title Father of his Country, and this because of his youth. And so they basically just, it's like, it's a monarchy now.
Yes.
It really is a monarchy.
Yeah.
It's just all handed down
in
to
orbit.
You. In orbit name, yeah. Because he still takes a handful of consulships in his life.
Sure.
It's
customary.
Yeah, yeah. Suetonius was told just this flatly out. that Nero turned over all his public and private affairs to Agrippina on the first day when he had to give a watchword to the Praetorian Guard. The watchword is the best of mothers. Hmm. Apparently she would say to him all the time, whenever he tried to sort of kick back, he would just say, she would tell him, you're only emperor because of me.
Which is probably true.
Well, it is true. It is true.
So,
yeah. Well, so she had her machinations. She'd got herself married to Claudius, her own uncle, sort of against, well, it's against the law and it's against morality and all sorts of things, really. So she sort of forced the issue to get herself and him anywhere near the heart of power.
Yet another one of those examples of a woman not being powerless in a patriarchy.
Yeah. She's unbelievably powerful, and everyone knew it as well.
Yeah.
Because Claudius's key freedman, Pallas and Narcissa, she fiddles around behind the scenes to make sure. Well, Narcissus is her man. Mm. Pallas, he had three men. Callistus is already dead of natural causes before this happens.
Yeah.
Pallas is her man, and she makes sure he is sort of becomes the undisputed man behind the scenes.
Mm.
And Narcissus, the other main freedman, Claudius's other main freedman, she has him arrested immediately. When Tiberius came to power, they had Posthumus murdered just straight away. Yeah. Immediately send someone to do that.
Because Narcissus was useful in the previous regime.
Well, he knew where all the bodies were buried, so to speak.
Yeah. He was one of the key players.
Absolutely key players. Yeah. So the second Nero becomes emperor, she sends out a team to have him arrested, and he dies in custody. Like, pretty much straight away, almost.
He's murdered, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. The key players, the head of the Praetorian Guard is Burrus at this point.
Right.
A guy called Burrus. He's apparently a hard-bitten, straight-talking soldier-type guy. And he will just tell Nero, just flat out, no, you're not doing this, or something.
Well, I like him already.
Yeah. He'll just say, no, you're a kid. No, we're not going to do it. Nero might, even when he was very young, you order him to do something weird or bizarre. And Burrus will just be like, no. And famously, Nero's tutor, his main tutor, is Seneca.
Right.
The philosopher Seneca.
Right.
So there's lots of writings left by Seneca. And it's been said that the greatest thing any teacher, any philosopher could ever hope for is to be the teacher or tutor of a great monarch who's going to rule the world, the known world. You know, like Aristotle got to be the tutor of Alexander.
Yeah.
You can't ask for more than that in life if you're going to be a philosopher in the ancient world.
Mm.
So Seneca thinks himself very, very, very lucky. Well, he is in a way.
Well, I mean, assuming Nero doesn't go mental and kill him. I mean, I assume that was what happened.
Yeah.
I actually don't know what happens to Seneca. But, you know, when you're this close to a maniac.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, the problem with powerful maniacs like this is the eye of Sauron. It's the fact that if they can perceive you, well, they can end up doing something terrible to you. So the best thing to do is just stay away from them. Just go and live on a farm in Spain or somewhere. You know, go, you know, oh yeah, I'm just in the, you know, I'm a little farmer in the province of Britannia. I don't know anything about you and you don't know anything about me. And I'll live a long and peaceful life because of it.
With crazy tyrants. So obviously if you do anything bad or annoy them or undermine them or double cross them, obviously you're in trouble then. But if you're very, very, very good and virtuous and you show up there, you're basically showing them up by being so good.
That can even be worse because then they don't have anything on you.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have any way of just, you know, you should do this because then everyone will know, blah, blah, blah. So no, you can't do that. I'm a good man. Yeah, good point. Get rid of him.
Yeah. If you're too successful.
Yeah. Never outshine the master. Robert Greene's first rule of power.
Right.
And that's the problem.
Absolutely. Well, and all that sort of stuff plays out towards the end. Well, not that long into Nero's reign, because he rules for quite a while. What is it? 13, really, 14 odd years.
Yeah.
He has a good innings.
You know, I really didn't know how Seneca died.
All right. Okay.
I really didn't.
We'll get to it.
I was just like, I don't really want. You know, I just know what happens when you're this close to maniacs.
It's not by natural causes.
Yeah. Well, sure. What a surprise.
But to begin with, at least, Burrus and Agrippina, Nero's mother, and Seneca are able to basically control Nero. Because he's still 16, 17-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And a thing in Roman culture and society, very, very strongly, is you do what your parents tell you to do.
Yeah.
So that's very, very strong in their culture and society. So at least for a while, not all that long, but for a few years that yeah. sort of it holds. So Agrippina, for example, has double the number of lictors that Livia ever had assigned to her, and all sorts of privileges
right.
that only really someone like Livia, the Augusta,
yeah.
had. So she's pretty much one of the most powerful women Rome's ever seen. Well, she is, in fact. Mm. Not pretty much. She is. And we're told she dared to strive after the rule of the sacred world, like openly as well. You know, it's pretty open.
Yeah.
A lot about Agrippina and Nero are that they're in the Caligula mold where nearly everything's open to the public. You know, like how Augustus and Tiberius tried to cloak and hide what they were doing.
But they've decided it just doesn't matter.
Mm. Well, because they're living in a monarchy now, it's almost expected, or it's almost better to do it in a way, because people will respect it. We'll get into the weird psychology of that.
Okay.
If you do really, really brazen crimes, it might be better just to say, yeah, I did that. Yeah. What are you going to do? It's part of my charisma. It's part of my appeal.
Because in a way, if you do them in secret, it makes you seem cowardly.
Yeah.
Right. And it means that someone's got something over on you. But if you say, yeah, I did this, and what? Then it's just, well, are you going to overthrow me? I've got all these guards. And the answer is no. So deal with it.
There is something liberating, like Letterman, just saying, no, you're not going to, no one's going to blackmail me. Hmm. Yeah, I do bad things. Yeah, I do bad things. What now? Yeah, I'm admitting to it.
Yeah. All of your moral strings don't work.
Yeah.
And you can't pull anything.
Well, Nero ends up leaning into that
great.
Big time. We told Agrippina that the summit attained by Agrippina was a precarious one. That's a line from Tom Holland. Because the House of Caesar now is quite very different to when Augustus and even when Tiberius was alive. It's now extremely murderous. Mm. They're just all undercutting each other.
Mm.
Loads mentioned Domitia, Domitia Lepida there. There are lots of different members of the August family, and it's sort of a den of vipers. It's very, very
well, it was destined to be, wasn't it?
It
was won through civil war. The only legitimacy it has is force, and so killing one another is the way to victory.
Mm. Right, yeah,
there's no legitimate succession, there's no divine mandate.
There's no other way. It's sort of got to be that in this period of ancient history anyway. Yeah. There's no like grand tradition of being very civilized.
No, but there's no sort of mandate of heaven you can appeal to, you know, because, you know, you can't say, well, the gods, you know, installed my father as the king of England or something. And therefore, you know, and I through this lineage have divine right to rule. You know, you can't say that. Because that's not what happened, and that's not what the people believe. And so you've got no transcendent tapestry to appeal to that you are a part of. You know, you can't say, I'm a thread in this great tapestry. What you have to say is, we're the ones with the swords, as Pompey said, in fact. You know, don't quote laws to us, we who have swords. Like that, because that's all this has been built on.
Yeah, I mean, Tacitus is quite clear that Augustus is a military dynast. He's a military dictator, was, really.
Yeah. I mean, so was Caesar.
He did everything he could to pretend he wasn't, but that is what he was.
Yeah.
And these are his heirs still. Yeah. So, yeah, it's all based on that.
It's a military occupation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Tom Holland says there was just, though, Agrippina had lots of enemies, though.
Of course she did.
There was like a bitter mistrust on the Palatine or in the halls of power, all the senators and things. A bit of mistrust.
Every other Roman noble is an enemy of these people.
Yeah. Sort of, yeah, basically, yeah. He talks of that she had a brooding presence in all the government, for want of a better word. It's funny to say the Imperial Roman period in this period, a government, because it's not as we know government or anything, but still you get what we mean.
Someone was in charge and pulling the levers of power.
And she was just at the absolute heart of that. Yeah. Even in military matters, which is really a no-no, like really badly a no-no.
Yeah.
So when, for example, it's absolutely scandalous to the point where the regime could collapse, that's how scandalous it was.
Mm.
So very early on in Nero's reign, an embassy comes from Armenia, from the Parthian world. And Agrippina's quite literally standing next to Nero. And they come forward and she goes to greet them. And apparently that was sort of...
Well, they must have been like, why is a woman talking to me?
So Seneca very, very quickly grabs Nero and says, just take the reins in this moment, like push her back and you go forward yourself. Do that right now, quick. And Nero does. And apparently a massive scandal was averted in that moment.
Yeah.
Because it would have been revealed to the world that she was the ruler.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone would have known because this was in public again.
Mm.
And I mean, Nero...
It would have been an international scandal.
Yeah.
The Armenians would have gone back to Armenia and explained to the Parthians, oh, the Romans are being controlled by a woman. So if you ever wanted a bit of their territory, now's the time.
Yeah. And not just a woman, like a sort of kind of an incestuous, duplicitous... So yeah, she's not like a great Roman matriarch.
Yeah, she's not a virtuous woman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Everyone knows sort of what she is, who she is. yeah, she would always say to him, it was I who made you emperor. And she leans into that. Well, that's only going to go so far, especially with someone like, I mean, if he was a really wet person.
Yeah.
But he's not. He's not at all.
He's got a strong personality of his own, doesn't he?
Mm. They put her on all the coins where her face is as big as his. All this sort of thing. All this sort of thing. So to begin with, both Tacitus and Suetonius do this thing in making out that he starts off not too bad, that his reign starts off not, you know, a complete insane tyranny.
Well, I think the thing to remember as well that the ancient historians were often moralists at the same time.
Absolutely.
And they viewed themselves as extracting true aspects of human morality from the historical tales that they were telling. And honestly, that's what makes them so compelling, frankly. That's why I love Plutarch, because he's just the apex of this, in my opinion. And he is just so good at writing the not only just the history of it, but the morality of it in a way that he summarizes in only a few words a great deal of moral weight in the statements. And so this is a totally common thing for people in the ancient world to do. Mm. And in fact, modern historians are weird for not doing it.
Right, yeah.
No, I really think so.
I think Lord Acton said historians should be a judge and a hanging judge at that.
Yeah.
Well, in my opinion, I also love Plutarch.
But this is why I quite like Tom Holland, because he's prepared to make moral
decisions. But Tacitus is the king of it, really.
Right.
I mean, it's over-egged even sometimes. But yeah, Tom Holland doesn't mind throwing in a judgment.
Yeah,
I quite like it.
This is why I was a fan of Harold Lamb, because he's got a lovely way of, like this sort of old English way of, like, rolling out the events and then just, like, full stopping it with a moral judgment. And then, you know, moving on to the next event. And it's just, it's such a beautiful thing to read.
Mm. Yeah.
Genuinely is. We should do his History of the Crusades at some point, because it's just fantastic. Anyway, yeah.
I've listened to a fair bit of that on audio.
It's just so good.
So the handful of small good things Nero does towards the beginning are that there were some, during the reign of Claudius towards the end, there were a few more treason trials. The thing Maestas, the crime of Maestas is treason, really.
Yeah.
And where that had got sort of out of control during the age of Tiberius, and then sort of again Caligula was using it. And then a small, to a much less degree, but still a worrying amount, towards the end of Claudius's reign.
Hmm.
Well, Nero, to begin with, stops it entirely.
Right.
He does some good building projects. He builds a wooden theatre, the Theatre of Nero. Puts on games. People love him for putting on games and all that kind of thing. Suetonius says, I have assembled the catalogue of Nero's acts, some forgivable, some even praiseworthy, in order to segregate them from his follies and crimes, which I must now begin to list. Because there's not that many great things he does,
right?
You know, or good or nice things. A bit like Caligula. There's so many parallels with Caligula, really.
Yeah.
The most of the good things he does is to try and win the favour of the plebs.
Mm. Where does Nero's desire to do evil come from, do you think? Because, I mean, with Caligula, it's, you know, easy to see that it comes from the abuse that Tiberius laid upon him, right? Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Okay, that's easy to see. But is merely living in the paranoid imperial household under the heel of Agrippa enough to, like, make it understandable that a person would become so wildly evil?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's, you know, who knows really?
Yeah.
But it's a great question. Yeah, why was Caligula, assuming they're not completely 100% clinically round the bend, why are they so sadistic and mean and cruel? Why?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't know either. I'm asking, so.
I think most people, I've had thought about this lots as well.
Mm.
The only thing I could really say, and this is just my opinion, I suppose, is that children, young people, are really a reflection of their parents, aren't they, in all sorts of ways. If you're raised by someone that's cruel and sadistic and you just see it.
Yeah, it's normal.
That it's normal to beat or execute your slaves for almost nothing. It's normal to do that.
And Agrippina was this bad, I suppose.
Or you're just even told that's what you're supposed to do. Mm. I've actually thought often, why was the family of Augustus so bad? Because the first few of them weren't all that bad. Like Augustus was kind of clement.
Yep.
Drusus, Tiberius's brother, doesn't seem to have been too bad. Germanicus doesn't seem to have been too bad. But then the generation that sort of Caligula and Nero
are monsters.
It's off the scale. I think there's the character of Agrippina the Elder, who sort of acted like something like a matriarch, I suppose. Maybe she was a really, really bad influence. I don't know. In Robert Graves' I, Claudius, she's painted as being quite nice.
Really?
Or Antonia, Claudius's mother. Mm. If those people were, I don't know. There's no great answer for that. Okay. Why is Nero so bad?
Yeah. So, but that's the thing. With Caligula, it's actually kind of easy to see why he's so bad. You know, and so with Nero, I was thinking, okay, not a fun life, but it like Claudius didn't Claudius didn't have a fun life either, and he wasn't a terrible psychopath.
Right, yeah.
You know, he had a paranoid, kind of brutalized upbringing, and he wasn't a terrible psychopath. Whereas Nero, okay, yeah, he's paranoid upbringing, but does that make one necessarily cruel?
Mm.
So I was just curious.
It's interesting that thing that when someone's becomes an extremely violent person in adulthood and they say, well, I was beaten as a child, that only goes so far with me, because lots of people are brutalised and beaten in their youth and don't go on to repeat it.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, I can understand that
there's something to it.
There's something to it. But it's not an excuse.
And Nero wasn't really. He was kind of born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and it only gets better and better and better.
Yeah.
So I think also this is my opinion. Some people, it seems, are innately horrible and cruel and selfish, right?
That's definitely true.
Sometimes you get a little toddler which has barely had any, it hasn't really been able to learn anything because it's a toddler and it's violent. It's innately. Sometimes you get a little toddler which will like crush a kitten or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes it happens.
Oh, I know.
Other children, small children, are very, very sweet.
I can see it in the difference in my own sons.
We'll share things without being told to.
My oldest son is the softest, sweetest boy, and my youngest son is a terror. He's not like cruel, and he's actually very kind to the cats. But he's enamored with his own sense of agency,
right?
And he doesn't. If he can do something, he'll just do it because he's like, brilliant, I can move my hand, I can throw this cup. And you're just like, no, you know. But my oldest son never did any of that.
Right.
So,
yeah.
It's just, you know, and this is the same parents, same upbringing. You know, it's just, there are innate differences between people. This is absolutely true.
Funny, I've got two nephews both parents raised in the same household. One is very, very sweet and gentle.
Mm.
And the other one, just as you say, like your youngest.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a bit of a terror.
Yeah.
And there's no rhyme or reason to it. They've just got their own personalities. They've got their own personalities.
You know, he's not evil or anything. You know, he's just, he's two and he's just realizing that he can move things in the world because he's only just started walking, really, you know.
Right, yeah.
And so he's realized, I can pick things up. Oh, I can move these things. I can throw these things. And it's, oh, no, just stop, you know.
Quite often, I think actually, unfortunately. It's a bit depressing to say, but I think most people, you need to be taught to be good.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you need to be taught to be good. And if you're never taught to be good, or if you're even encouraged to be cruel and unusual, and that's already sort of in you to be like that.
If it's normal around you.
Yeah. Mm. And your adulthood becomes an exercise in pushing the limits of it as well. Well, that's maybe why you end up with a Nero, like a sort of an antichrist figure. And I use that word specifically because he did bad things to the early Christians. But so let's get into a bit more detail then. So he was married to Claudius's daughter, an Octavia.
Right.
She was very, very prim and proper and straight-laced and nice and good.
Bad luck.
Yeah, Nero didn't like that, wasn't interested in that. So quite soon, he sort of doesn't divorce her yet, but he just puts her aside.
Another win for Claudius, though. My daughter isn't a hedonistic degenerate like other people's daughters. I wasn't a maniac. Claudius is looking pretty great at this point.
So that's the other thing we talk about. Why are some of them so mean? It's not that the whole of society is like that. Because there are some good, there are definitely lots of good moral people.
Yeah.
And as you say, the moralists know what's right and wrong. I think deep down in some people, the desire to be subversive, the fact that there is a very strong sense of right and wrong and goodness, but you're going to deliberately subvert that.
I think some people definitely take a pleasure in it.
So he takes he's the first lover, an actress, Acte, who apparently was extremely attractive.
Right.
And he marries her, but Agrippina hates that because she was an ex-slave.
Yeah.
She was a freedwoman. It's just actress. An actress. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is Claudius's daughter, the previous emperor.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing? It's like, yeah, but she's really boring, Mum. This is a beautiful woman who'll do everything I want. And I mean, honestly, I'm just pleased that Nero's interested in adult women who are attractive at this point. You know, my standards for them are so low. It's like, well, he's into a woman. That's a good start, you know?
Yeah.
There are lots of them that haven't been.
It gets mad. Okay. Let me say it again. This is not child friendly. It gets to points where...
Go on.
So, okay. So he takes it. So Nero... still only about 17, this isn't like a year or so into his reign, it becomes clear that he's just not going to do what Agrippina wants on this one.
Right.
And Seneca sort of realises the balance of power might be slightly shifting, so he actually backs Nero on it.
Hmm.
Agrippina fairly quickly realises, oh, well, okay, if he's not going to give in, I may as well just 180 this and give him my blessing.
Right.
Because he's digging his heels in. I also think sometimes when you're young, when you're 17, 18, 19, and you're like besotted with someone,
it's like a magic spell on a young man. And every young man, if you're like a young man and you don't know what we're talking about, trust us, when you're our age, you'll understand.
Yeah.
You were definitely beguiled by nature. This is something I've been thinking about, like writing something on, actually. The power of nature to make your mind misty and not your own. In some ways, when it comes to this, like the perfume of a particular woman and things like that, something happens and you are not in control of the decisions you're making in a way.
When I was 18 or 19, in my mind, just my relationships were just so overblown. Looking back at it now, I'd blown everything out of all proportion.
Intense.
Madly.
Insanely intense.
So, that's exactly the word for it.
Yeah.
Insanely intense.
Yeah.
So... I can understand.
I look back now with the wisdom of age and think, wow, nature plays a cruel trick on young men.
Yeah.
You know, she really, really does.
Like the Romeo and Juliet thing, that these young kids really are prepared to kill themselves over it. It's like, well, I never went that far, obviously, nowhere near, but I can see it, though.
Yeah.
You think it's the whole universe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You go out with someone for 2 months and you think it's your whole world.
There's something magical that happens to you. And it's not, it's a kind of a curse.
It's dangerous. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. But anyway, so okay. Nero has fallen in love with this actress.
A couple of his friends, Vitellius and Otho, got to mention straight off the bat. And they're a really bad influence.
Right.
Like really bad. Like as bad as you can get to the point where... just violence and sex crime.
Right.
And he just falls in with them, where Seneca is sort of the most straight-laced tutor, particularly Otho, he's his tutor in vice, if you like.
Right.
They sort of go around doing extremely cruel and violent things for no good reason to random people and stuff.
Sort of like Clockwork Orange stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God. Yeah. Yeah. Like that.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. At one point, Nero tries to fire Pallas, his mother's very powerful freedman, because he realizes that's sort of one of the cornerstones of her power.
Mm.
And she realizes what sort of what's going on, that he's trying to undermine her.
Yeah.
And she goes mad at him and says, no, not only, I'm just not letting that happen. No.
Right.
And apparently she threatens him, I should go to the Praetorian Guard with Britannicus. And now listen to me, the daughter of the great Germanicus, and I'll have him proclaimed emperor. And we'll do away with you.
That's treason.
Yeah. Well, she's the ruler. She's the ruler. Because he backs down.
Does he?
Yeah. Okay. He's like, oh God, I haven't really quite got the power base I need at this moment. Time, yeah. She is still holding all the cards, basically.
Right.
Because she can control Burrus, the Praetorian Guard, and stuff.
Yeah.
So he tries to sort of assert himself, and it doesn't work. It backfires quite badly. I shall take Britannicus to the Praetorian camp, saying that to Nero.
Hmm.
Well, he's not going to put up for that for too long. No. So there is Britannicus.
He's not going to forget
Claudius
that. He's not going to forget that.
Mm. So there is Britannicus, Claudius's legitimate son, who's only a couple of years younger.
Hmm.
And so he is really a rival. Well, he's definitely a rival.
Hmm.
We're told Nero repeatedly rapes him.
Right.
Just that. Like, he's 17 and Britannicus is like 14 or 15. So he's able to physically do that to him. So he does.
Right.
Yeah. And just as in our culture, it's the most devastating, humiliating thing you could do.
Yeah.
So right away, Nero already, you know, straight away, really, is
a maniac.
A bit of a maniac. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Just, in the Caligula mold of doing anything. So he then has Britannicus just poisoned.
Oh, I was going to say, when does he kill him?
A public, 1 year into his reign, 55 AD.
Right, so not even long.
In front of everyone as well, a banquet, a public banquet. Suetonius actually goes into more detail than Tacitus does on this. He says this is like a famous poisoner woman.
Right.
And he tries to poison Britannicus one time, but it doesn't really work. It just gives him a bad stomach.
Right.
And Nero's mad at her and really angry at her and beats her up himself. And he says, just distill it down, distill the poison down again and again.
Mm.
And they test it on a pig or something and it still takes a few hours to die. And he's like, no, distill it down more and more and more until they test it on another pig and it dies immediately.
Right.
And then he has Britannicus poisoned with that at a banquet. And no one's in on it. Agrippina's not in on it. His actual legitimate wife, Octavia, who's his sister, isn't in on it. And he just starts choking and sort of keels over at this banquet. And everyone is like, what just happened?
It's like King Joffrey style.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I never thought of that, but it's exactly that. It's like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Apparently Nero just says, I've heard he had epilepsy, so it's probably just that.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And kind of everyone, like, tell me you did it without telling me you did it.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, even Agrippina's like, obviously Nero just orchestrated that.
Yeah.
And they take his body and they sort of burn it real quick on the campus.
I kind of wish Britannicus had been in charge.
I feel really sorry for Britannicus. He's one of those people in history. It's very, very difficult not to just feel really sorry for him.
Doesn't seem to have done anything wrong.
No, he hasn't. No, yeah. Other than being who he was.
Hmm.
But now the power games have changed a bit there, because where Agrippina had this card, she could at least threaten.
Yeah, there was I can't get Britannicus in charge anymore.
Mm.
Yeah.
So her position is actually undermined a fair bit.
But it was only a matter of time until Nero killed Britannicus because of her threat against him.
Right.
No question of it. Obviously, I'm not going to kill my mum, but I'll kill any pawn that she thinks she's going to use.
You would imagine he would have killed Britannicus anyway.
Yeah,
quite, to be honest. Quite quickly.
Yeah.
Again, there's parallels with Caligula and Gemellus.
Hmm.
He's got to be out of the way, pretty much.
Yeah.
So the Claudian line dies with Britannicus. That's the end of the Claudian line. He's the last true Claudian.
Right, okay.
And we're told that all else is dusty ash and pale shadow from that point on. And there's sort of a big thunderstorm when his body's burnt, and the poison was such that his face was turned a horrible colour, and so they tried to paint him to make him look not so bad.
Yeah.
And lots of people were upset and scared.
Well, I bet they were.
But
then that's probably just the normal state of affairs in Imperial Rome at this point.
Yeah.
Who hasn't been upset and scared for a long time now?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So soon after that, we'll just carry on with the story of Agrippina, really. Soon after that, an actor, one of the famous actors in Rome, Paris, comes to Nero and says, whether it's orchestrated by Nero or not, I don't know, we're not sure. But this famous actor comes to Nero one night when Nero's very drunk. Again, he's still only like 18 years old or something.
But this sounds like a silly idea.
And he says, your mother, Agrippina, is guilty of all sorts of these crimes. She's been sleeping with this guy and this guy. And she's been undermining your power here and here. She may even be plotting against you. Da, 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 da. Nero just calls for Burrus and other people and says to them, go get her, kill her now. And Burrus just says, no, you're drunk. Go to bed.
Based Burrus.
Yeah. Mm. Well, so that episode, Nero does. So Nero does.
Yeah, good point. I am really drunk.
He's not able to stand up to Burrus if anyone else.
Right.
If Burrus says no, it's a no.
Hmm. Well, good for him.
Yeah. Apparently the next day he does sort of back down. But people hear about that. Agrippina hears about that.
Hmm. Well, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and the next day, or quite quickly, he's talked down from it. And the next day he sort of regrets that he did that. But there's bruises that won't heal now.
Yeah, I feel like we've kind of got like Milo Yiannopoulos in charge of Rome.
Yeah.
So, you know, these sort of passions that take hold of him, okay, but you're not the master of the universe like you think. And, you know.
First time I ever saw...
I say this to someone who's a friend of Milo.
First time I ever saw Milo on a YouTube video or something, who's been carried in somewhere on a palanquin.
Yeah.
By like six burly guys on this on this throne.
I remember it.
And I immediately thought, ugh. That was my thought.
See, I didn't mind it because there's something to be said for those sort of characters who do interesting and unusual things.
Even play acting at that stuff.
But you don't want to give them power.
It's shades of Nero or Caligula or...
I mean, his Twitter handle was @Nero.
Right, of course, right, yeah. Why would you idolise... It's like idolising the Young Turks.
I don't know.
A gang of disgusting murderers, the Young Turks. Idolizing them, naming yourself after them.
Genocidal regime.
Yeah. Name yourself after Nero. Even in jest, it's like, ugh, to me.
Well, I mean...
Why would you
want
to do
my
that?
My namesake was genocidal too, so...
That's true, actually.
Yeah, so...
That's true, actually. Well, then, never thought about that.
The problem is, if you go back far enough in history, like, who wasn't?
But you, speaking to you for any sort of amount of time, watching any of your content, you realise that you're not...
a genocidal maniac.
You're not like an extreme narcissist, which I think Milo is. But whatever, I don't want to talk about Milo. Don't like the man, not interested in him. So there is a power struggle. There's a power struggle now between Nero and Agrippina.
Well, yeah, and Agrippina is surely going to lose. Because she's not the emperor. And she's a woman.
Right, yeah. Well, it's about maybe who can control the Praetorians, because that's where the real ultimate power of, you know, violence, the ultimate thing. Well, okay. So Burrus and Seneca realise that they do kind of need Agrippina around, though, because if she's ever out of the picture, they...
Who's an influence on Nero?
Yeah, he might be completely unleashed and out of control. What's to stop him then from realising they're superfluous? They can be done away with as well. Mm. So they actually, at this stage, realise that, you know, as mendacious as she is, malevolent as she is, they still need her around. They're still sort of ultimately on her side. Mm. So again, there's a bit of a power struggle goes on. Nero tries to play political cards to have her sort of removed from power, or she does. Coins are a great thing for archaeologists. She does sort of start to disappear off the coinage.
Yeah.
Her power is eroded, but not entirely. Like she has a renaissance, if you like. At one point, she was able to. There's a back and forth a bit. she's able to replace loads of people on the panel time with her people again at one point. And it looks like Nero's completely failed in his plans to undermine her. So there's a power struggle for a while there. It's quite interesting. Tacitus, if you're interested in that, Tacitus, there's loads more in Tacitus than in Suetonius about all of that.
I'm surprised that, well, I'm not surprised, but, you know, this, like, if Hollywood have gotten to the idea of, oh, we need, like, Game of Thrones style series and movies, you know, people like the sort of ancient intrigue. Well, this seems like a perfect time for it.
Yeah.
You know, why not do a Nero?
Yeah.
Paint him as the villain, because he obviously is.
Yeah. One more thing quickly to say about his personal life before I move on to Agrippina's sticky end is that he gets bored of Acte and he marries apparently one of the most, if not the most beautiful woman in Rome, Sabina Poppaea.
Bad luck for her.
Or just Poppaea. Well, she's sort of down with it all because she's actually the wife of Otho, who is extremely venal and cruel and degenerate.
Right.
And she's his wife. But everyone covets her. Apparently she was ridiculously attractive. Right. Like the most attractive woman in Rome or in the world or something like that.
Hmm.
And Nero fancies her very much or is in love with her and decides he wants her. And they're lovers for a while, but in the end he decides he wants her just for himself. So he toys with the idea whether I should kill Otho, one of his closest friends, probably his closest friend. But he decides just to make him a governor out in Spain.
Oh, that's good for him.
Out in Lusitania somewhere. You're right, yeah, just about survives that one, yeah. And he's got no choice.
Well, obviously, he's got no choice.
And so he marries Poppaea at that point, Nero does. And it seems, well, he does sort of really, really love her. He's not like, he puts her on a pedestal sort of a thing.
Mm. Like he's a simp, yeah.
Like how Caligula had one particular wife that he was never really out of order to, didn't torture and murder.
Yeah.
So Nero has that, Poppaea. Okay, a few lines then, or a few couple of paragraphs from Suetonius about Agrippina. Suetonius says, "The passion he, Nero, felt for his mother, Agrippina, was notorious, but her enemies would not let him consummate it, fearing that if he did, she would become even more powerful and ruthless than hitherto." So there was...
Sorry, he wants to have sex with his own mum?
Yep. Yep. So he found a new mistress who was said to be her exact image.
Oh, yeah.
Some say that he did, in fact, commit incest with Agrippina every time they rode in the same litter. The state of his clothes when he emerged proved it. So there was only rumours whether they did or not, but... there's just the weirdest relationship because there's also a massive power struggle between them.
Yeah.
But they're also maybe Robert Graves goes with that they do sleep together.
God. Yeah. I mean, not Nero. He could never do such thing. Yeah. Right. I mean,
again, in Roman society, there's a massive taboo. It's not like some weird Egyptian thing where maybe it's allowed in the royal courts. No, no.
The pharaoh
it's
being
one of the worst things you can do.
The pharaoh being the incarnation of the god and the divine lineage on earth should sleep with his sister in Egypt.
Right.
But Rome is not Egypt.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.